Christmas seminar. Theme, next step, imagination. I'm spiritually illumined. Lecture one, next step, illumination. Now that's sort of an inviting idea, next step, illumination. How many of you have considered the next step to be illumination of your spiritual awareness? It's an interesting concept for us, and we have all considered it from time to time and wondered just where we stand in that concept. But we are all there very wonderfully, very powerfully, very beautifully, waiting for it to unfold for us. Next step, illumination. That's an inviting concept. As we have spoken the word next step, illumination, what has happened? Have you noticed the sun came out?
Yeah.
Have you noticed that the room is now illumined brightly by the sun and by all the light that we have? It's rather nice. How do we move ourselves in preparation for this next step of illumination? How do we prepare ourselves for that? We're all interested in becoming illumined. We're all interested in becoming aware of the divinity within us, and as we said at the breakfast table this morning, what is it that we really would like? Do we want to be spiritually illumined people, or do we want to be physically, relatively accomplished people, or both? Now, have you ever noticed that a spiritually illumined person has absolutely no interest in the world around him? Oh, but they are. Oh, if they are, they are not spiritually illumined. A spiritually illumined person has no interest in the world about them. A spiritually illumined person has no interest in the world about them. And I can say this 100,000 times. The spiritually illumined person has no interest in the world about them. If I may add the word except, that the spiritually illumined person sees the world about them exactly as they would have it be. They see the world in harmony. They see the world in peace. They see the world abundant. They see the world whole and perfect in every tiniest aspect. They do not for the slightest moment observe the illusions that take place in the world. When they look at a person, they look through them to their spiritual reality, their spiritual wholeness, their spiritual perfection. They do not see the outer, for the outer is but merely a shell of the awareness of that person at that moment. And that moment can change. That moment can change so quickly, just like the sun now has gone behind the cloud. That moment can change so quickly, and then the sun will burst out from behind the cloud, and you say, wow, isn't that beautiful? It's whatever decision you make for yourself. Whatever decision you feel is important for you. The next step is illumination. And that's the step that we will be taking during this seminar time. We'll be having these various lectures on topics of next step, illumination. Are you ready for the next step? Are you ready to decide what it is that excites you? What it is that excites you along your spiritual path? So many times I give exercises to people on the spiritual path, and I tell them this is important to do. And they just stick their tongue out at me and go their merry way. And then they say, I didn't get anything out of that program. I didn't get anything out of that instruction. That person really is not very brilliant. That's true. I'm not. I'm not brilliant. I am me. I live what I believe. And you cannot compare who I am to who you are, nor who you are to anyone else. Each of us are unique expressions of our own divinity. Now, what am I expressing of my divinity? Do you see glimpses at times in my life that you think is good? And do you see glimpses at times in my life that you think is bad? Well, just remember one simple thing. Who is the observer? Who is the observer? And I'm not saying that you're right or wrong. I'm just saying, who is the observer? When we observe anything in life, we observe it from our own background and from our own experiences, from who we are. And as long as you think you're a loser, you're going to observe everything as a loser. And the winners, they observe everybody as a winner. They don't know any losers. You know that? The winners just do not know any losers. When the children play together in the yard, they see everybody as enjoying themselves and having fun and doing everything neat and wonderful. If one kid has a sour puss, they say, "Why you got a sour puss? Aren't you having fun?" He said, "Well, my dog died." "Oh, what kind are you going to get now?" You know, don't dwell on that which is changing, that which is released. What kind of dog are you going to get now? You know? My brother Ray lost his dog, Tipper, who was getting along in years. And this was Tipper number 3 already. And so I mentioned to him, "Well, Ray, what kind of dog are you going to get now?" He says, "Any dog at all, but I've been down there, and man, do they cost a lot at the pound. Do they cost this, and you got to have shots, and you got to have everything. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man." I said, "Hey, what kind would you like?" He says, "Oh, just one like Tipper." And so Sylvia brought information to us about a little, what kind of dog was that? Jack Russell Terrier, who needed a new home. Jack Russell Terrier was living with a lot of big brothers and big sisters who were big, and he was just a little shrimp, or she was, rather. And so she needed a new home. And so we said, "Can't we keep it?" And I said, "No, no, no." And so then I was talking to Ray, and he said, "He's ready for a new dog." I said, "Well, would you like a Jack Russell Terrier?" "Oh, would I, would, yes, yes, yes." He tuned into it because there was something going on in his consciousness. Something was going on in his spiritual level of awareness of himself. He knew that dog before the dog even came to him. And when Sylvia brought the dog to him, the dog who had been making love to Sylvia all the way on the trip, instantly turned her affections to Ray, leaped up on his lap, and never got off. And Ray and that dog have been inseparable buddies from that day on. And that's months ago. And they are happy as can be. And sometimes the dog says he wants to go to bed. And he says, "Come on, Ray, I want to go to bed. Come on, come on, come on. You know, go to bed. It's time for you to go to bed, Ray." And Ray hadn't perhaps a chance then. So Tipper just jumps up in his lap. But you see, he jumps up and you don't even know it. It's like an air bubble floating up in the air and landing so gently in his lap. But you see, Ray put a cause in motion. And we happened to be the channel through which that cause came. Who could have ever dreamed Ray's dream dog would come from Campo, California to Hemet in Mount San Jacinto? Who would ever think that? And who would ever think that, how am I going to find the girl of my dreams? Oh my God, you know, I don't go to church, I don't go to bars, I don't go to singles groups, how am I ever going to find the girl or the guy of my dreams if I don't go someplace and meet them? When you are ready, you put the imagination into the universal consciousness and it brings to you whatever experience you want. When you are ready, you put the imagination into the universal consciousness, and whatever is what you really want, you get. When you are ready, you put the thought into the universal consciousness. You don't know you're doing it. You just are ready. And he was ready for another dog. And of course, what's the name of his new dog? Tipper. So Tipper the 5th, the 4th, whatever it is, has come into being. And Tipper doesn't mind. She doesn't care what he calls her. They're in love, and they're happy. Now, you need a man or a woman in your life, just put the thought in consciousness and let it be. Our beloved Stefan is thinking of having a new friend, and he hasn't decided who this new friend is going to be. He's been trying out many wonderful beings, and they find much in common, but they haven't found that one thing in common yet. And they won't, because he's looking. He hasn't put the thought in consciousness and created that perfect being in his life. Herb, I thought this was supposed to be about spiritual awareness and spiritual illumination. Why are you talking about the human illumination? Well, you see, when you have your act in order on the human level, which is where you are, then your act is in order on the spiritual level. When you learn how to place a cause in motion for your human desires, your human expressions, your human life, then you will be in a position to put the cause in motion for your spiritual life. Your spiritual life is no different than your human life. It's just that your spiritual life doesn't have to be repeated. Your human life has to be repeated every time you change your attitude about your girlfriend or your boyfriend. Every time you change your attitude about your desire for what it is that's important on your job or your relationship, you know. Whatever, every time you change your desire, you have to go through the whole thing over again and put the new cause in motion. But when you walk your spiritual path, you put your cause in motion, I am spiritually illumined. And that's a one-time job, and it's done. The moment you give yourself over to that, then it is done. You don't have to do anything more. You don't have to go chasing that spiritual illumination where you think it's going to be found. You don't have to go to the gurus of India, of China, of Japan, of Africa, of wherever you feel they are, or America or Europe, you know. Because when the teacher is ready, the student, is that the way it goes? No, when the student is ready, when the student is ready, the teacher is there. We keep thinking that we're searching for the teachers. Well, we have to recognize, are we willing to be a student? Now, this is the biggest problem I have with any person coming to our organization or coming to our study groups or coming to our seminars. They have not yet learned how to release that self way of doing things and give themselves over to a new program. Now, Rhonda is a physical culture enthusiast, and she loves weightlifting. She loves eating proper diets and foods. She loves doing all these things. She thinks that is the smoothest way to go, and for her it is. Okay, well, Rhonda has fallen in love with a new flame. She does that every couple months. So she's fallen in love with a new flame. And this new flame is into Blachta, which is a new form of physical culture that Rhonda's not familiar with. And Rhonda says, I must become aware of what this is if the two of us are to work harmoniously together. So Rhonda has a slight bit of motivation to learn Blachta. And Blachta is quite different. Blachta teaches that it's not what goes into the mouth, but what comes out. And so now Rhonda, instead of worrying about her diet and worrying about what she puts in her mouth, she has to worry about what comes out. And what comes out is sometimes, oh, I'm tired. Oh, I've just worked so hard. Oh, my muscles. Oh, I've got to relax them, and I've got to go to the masseur and so forth. And you see, that's not really what Rhonda wants to come out of her mouth, because that is a bunch of garbage that she's going to have to take care of. You see, all that garbage needs to have a shovel. And if Rhonda doesn't have a shovel for it, it's just going to pile up and pile up and pile up until she stinks, you know? And that's not a very pleasant thing. So Rhonda's boyfriend, her new flame, says, this is my philosophy, and I like you, but I'd like it if you'd show an interest in my philosophy, at least to see what it's all about. And Rhonda says, well, I'm a very dedicated person, and when I choose to learn something, I learn it, you know. And he says, all right, are you willing to go with me for 1 month? And we will go to the Blatchka Center, and we will follow their program 100%. Are you willing to do that? And Rhonda said, yes, for you, anything, you know. And so she goes to the Blatchka Center. And at the Blatchka Center, they eat food which is nondescript. It's not food that is fish, meat, vegetarian, you know, or any other kind. It's just food. And there's no attention given to it. And they wear clothes, no attention given to it, or they don't wear clothes. It all depends on what they happen to be thinking at the moment. That's unimportant. They don't even pick up a weight. Ah, Rhonda says, this is physical fitness. There's something missing here. And her boyfriend says, Rhonda, you promised now 1 month you'd give to this new program. So Rhonda says, but I'm not happy here. And her boyfriend says, then you must leave. If you are not happy here, you must do whatever comes out of your mouth. Oh, I'm happy with you. Well, if you're happy with me, then you have to be happy here too, because that's where I am. And she's, oh, all right, you know. And she goes through all of this falderal to finally pay attention. Well, she goes to the classes that he is going to. She goes to his guru, who is not a guru, but just an ordinary, wonderful guy, a mentor. And she goes to the masseurs and so forth, but they don't massage her. She says, what is this here? You don't even touch me. We are working on what comes out of the mouth. We are working on what comes out of the thought. We are seeing your body as the magical expression of wholeness that it is. We are seeing through the outer appearances to the inner real you. Ah, how about that, you know? And so Rhonda says, well, I promised, so I will do it. So she gives herself 100% to that month. She stops judging the program. That's the biggest thing. She stops judging the people who are directing the program, because she thinks they're a bunch of jerks at first, you know. Don't you know you got to touch a person, you got to make those muscles ache and move and things like that? And so she stops doing that. And then she stops thinking about the strange meals that they have. They taste all right, but they are strange. And she stops thinking about the fact that she's not able to use a phone, because there's no telephones there at all. And there's no radio at all. And there's no electricity at all. And there's no heaters in the buildings at all. And they're a little cool at night. And there's no blankets on the beds at all. There's no sleeping bags, but there is a bed. And she goes on and finds these at all experiences kind of overwhelming. But Rhonda says, if I have agreed to do something, I am going to do it with all of my heart, with all of my soul and all of my being. Besides, he's worth doing it for. Well, after a while, Rhonda stops doing it for him. And she starts doing it for herself. And the minute she starts doing it for herself, there's a great change in her experience. Whereas before, she was, how do you feel more peace? How do you feel more attention? How do you feel warm when you're cold? How do you do this? How do you do this? You know? And she stops looking outward for the answer. And she begins, as they tell her, to look within for the answer. Your warmth is within. Your peace is within. Your satisfaction is within. You are within. And she begins to look there. It's not easy. A week and a half have passed already, and she's been under a state of rebellion for that week and a half. But now she's beginning to look within, because nobody's giving her any hand. And there's no way to escape from the place, because she doesn't know where the exit is. It's just a big, beautiful place. You're not locked in, but you just don't know how to get out, you know. And so Rhonda decides, okay, well, my friend is here, and I like him, and he would not see any bad come to me, so I will just cooperate. So she cooperates. She begins looking within. she's kind of cold. And so she begins looking within for her inner warmth. And she begins thinking of all things that are warm and cozy and snuggly and nice. And she begins to feel warm and cozy and snuggly. She begins to look within to see where her spiritual pattern of life is, what her real desires are for herself, whether clothes are really her desire for herself, or whether her real desire for herself is to be in link, to be, what do they say on the computer, to be linked up with that divine within, you know, that you're one with the divine within, and that every thought you think is expressing the divine within you. And she's working on this. And she sees the other people there who didn't come with so much rebellion, and they were ahead of her. They were already enjoying these things. She noticed that they did, and she thought, how can they do that? They don't have blankets to keep them warm. They don't have clothes to keep them dry. They don't have this and that and the other thing, you know. How can they do that? But she's learning her lesson. She's learning it little by little, very little by very little, but she's learning it, and it's coming. But you see, learning it little by little, she's keeping it. Everything that she's learned, she has made hers. And as she has done this, the month is soon coming to an end. And she says to her friend, I don't know if I've done everything right. I know there's so much more to be achieved and so much more to be aware of, but I don't know if I've done anything. And the end of the month comes, click. And the friend says, Rhonda, I'm going to give you a gift. I'm going to let you look at yourself objectively as you came into this center. And I'm going to let you look at yourself objectively as you are today. Now you take a look. Well, Rhonda looked at herself objectively as she was when she came in there. She was an imbalanced person. She was not in balance. Her body was in one area strong and one area weak. Her digestive system in one area was doing an excellent job. In another area, it was letting many of the wonderful values of the food pass through her body without even stopping to say hello. And so she's able to look and see this, and she saw that this is what was happening to her when she came in, when she thought she was so superior to everything. And then she looked at herself as she had finished her month, and she saw a perfect harmony flowing right through her body, just like a beautiful ray of light, warm, gentle, and tender, illuminating every inner viscera, illuminating every inner attitude and thought that she had, and she felt so peaceful. And then she saw that her mind, which had once been a dark cloud, that she could not penetrate to know all of the wisdom that lay there, now was a radiant center beaming forth the brilliant hues of its magnificence. And she was alert, alive, and aware of all the knowledge of the universe, of all the things which before lay under the cloud blankly. And now it's open. And she saw much more. But as she looked, she realized, and she says, wow, you have given me a gift that no one in the world has been able to do. And her friend said, no, you have given me a gift, because now you see me as I am and not as you want me to be. Now you recognize who I am. I am the pure reflection of whoever you are. And now you are the spiritual master within yourself. And Rhonda says, oh, I feel so good. And he said, yes, I do too. And Rhonda says, I don't feel like I need anybody in my life. I just enjoy people as it pleases me, but I don't need them. I don't have to have them to make my life fulfilled, but I just enjoy them. And he said, that's right. And that's how I feel too. Now, you see, as we walk our spiritual path, we may not have a friend like Rhonda had to guide her through that special, very wonderful journey, away from the limitations that she built around herself into the unlimited self, which included all of that plus a lot more. Are you ready for that sort of an experience in your life? The next step is illumination. But the next step cannot come to you. It cannot be yours. It cannot be anything in your life if you don't give yourself over to it totally. If you don't, like I say to Ingeborg so often, Ingeborg, play the game. And Ingeborg said, but, play the game. It doesn't have to be a game that fits into your parameters. I often say to the group here, San Francisco is north of Seattle, or Los Angeles is south of Tijuana. And they say, well, those people are going to be very surprised. Don't judge. Don't become logical. Just mentally see San Francisco south of Tijuana and think to yourself, hey, that'd be fun to visit there, you know? That'd be fun to have San Francisco in the environment of Tijuana, or Los Angeles in the environment of Tijuana. Wouldn't that be fascinating? Wouldn't that be something if Tijuana had all of the sophistication of a fine city from the United States down there? Wow! Wouldn't it be fun if all of the nations of the world were able to enjoy the pure, free intercourse the United States has with each of its states? And yet each of its states are uniquely different. How wonderful that is, because that's what you see wherever you go. I've traveled to countries all over the world. I've traveled in Mexico, South America, everywhere I've been. It's just like the United States. It's just like the United States. But Herb, it isn't. They have banditos down there. America's got its banditos too. But you see, the thing is, it's just like the United States because I take me wherever I go, and I see what I am wherever I go. When I go to Switzerland, I see it just as modern and wonderful as the United States. People have said Switzerland hasn't gotten with it yet, you know, but really, it's whatever vision you take there. And the Swiss, they come to America and they say, oh, America's copied everything Switzerland has, you know. Well, isn't that a wonderful thing? Isn't that a wonderful compliment to America, that we copy Switzerland? And isn't it a wonderful compliment to Switzerland that they have things the world wants to copy? You know, when we begin to look at the world, when we begin to look at life from the point of view that all is in divine order, when we begin to look and see that I am the creator of everything I see. Everything I see, no matter where it is in the world, no matter what it's doing, everything I see, I have created somehow and in some wonderful way. Now, since I have created everything, then I can revise anything. I can improve it, if I want to say improve. I can add to it, I can take from it, I can just have a lot of fun. It's my privilege. Now, I don't do it in the outer. I do it all in the inner. I create only in the inner. Are you ready to create only in the inner? Can you keep your big mouth shut? Or do you have to go around saying, you're home perfect, you're home perfect, you're home perfect, you're wonderful, you're fantastic, you're glorious. Can you just look at whoever it is you're thinking about and look past them, look through them better, and see the divinity that lay within them, see their perfection, see them whole and perfect right now? And you don't have to get them to say the word, you don't have to get them to think the word, because they have no control. You are the only one who has control of your experience with anything else in this world. You are the only one who has control with the policeman. You're the only one who has control with the storekeeper. You're the only one who has control with your associates, with your family, with your friends. You, your thought. And this is what the next step teaches. It teaches that our thoughts are so powerful, so beautiful, so fulfilling, so rewarding, that it's just up to us to begin to let them be what they are. Now, how could you let your thought be what it is if you don't even know what it is? You think that your thought is very good. Well, that's fine. You think your thought is good? Does your toe hurt you? That's a stupid thought. Who wants their toe to hurt them? Is your toe whole and perfect? That's a good thought. Do you have a cold? That's a stupid thought. Are your lungs perfect? Is your body perfect? Is your health perfect? That's a good thought. Now, we have these stupid thoughts that we empower, and then we wonder why they are in our life. Well, it's up to us to stop having these stupid thoughts. A stupid thought is any thought that we do not wish to experience in our life, and yet we persist in thinking the thought. Yet we persist in thinking the thought. Now, we look at Rhonda and we say, Rhonda, you say you are a bodybuilder. Well, from all the bodybuilders that I have ever seen, you're not a Arnold Schwarzenegger, that's for darn sure, you know? In fact, you're not a Maria Shriver either. And you're not a lot of things. But what you have is not enough to make up a full person. You're such a slim Jim there. But you say, but that's the way I like it. No, Rhonda, that's not the way you like it. That's the picture you have of yourself. Now, have you ever looked at any of the other women bodybuilders and been begeistered, been delighted as you looked at them? Have you thought to yourself, wow, they have it well put together. Every organ, action, function of their body is in perfect order. They have just the right dimensions for their muscles, just the right dimensions for their bust and for their body. They're just fabulous women, and beautiful faces, and beautiful eyes, and glorious hair, you know, all that good stuff. Now, have you ever looked at another person in your profession whom you thought was perhaps your ideal? But you see, you haven't done it. You have looked at these people, you thought that they were ideal, but then for your own self-worth, you had to go back to your own expression and say, this is the way I want it. I am good just the way I am. And of course, so long as we say, I am good just the way I am, then that's the way we'll be. But if we know of any picture that is more what we'd like to have, then we are not happy just the way we are. If you look at every picture and you see an exact replica of yourself, then yes, that's exactly the way you'd like it to be. But if you look at any picture and it is a little different and more of what you really would like to be, then that's the truth for you. So you cannot kid anybody, especially not yourself, because your body knows. Your body knows that you are willing to take second best. And as long as you're willing to take second best, that's what your body will give you. Our bodies, our minds, our soul give us exactly what it is that we think we are. Are we second best? Are we good but not quite there? Then that's what we are. When do you want to be there? After you're dead? You want to have them do a rework over on your body like a Frankenstein so you come out with a body that they can bury that you can be proud of? Doesn't sound too cool, does it? Okay. The program of following whatever it is that we're going to do this next week is very demanding. It's very demanding because you immediately take departments of your life and close them off. When the handyman comes, Button loves him so much he wants to get near him, and we have to take Button and close him in the back room so he won't disturb the handyman. So we take Button and close him in the back room so he won't disturb the handyman. So we take Button and close him in the back room so he won't disturb the handyman. So we take Button and close him in the back room so he won't disturb the handyman. So we take Button in the back room and close it so he won't disturb the hand. Why would we do something like that? Why don't we just say, Button, behave, sit, quiet, I love you. Button, relax. Button, you are an expression of my inner panic, my inner love, my inner hate, my inner joy, my inner confusion, my inner life. Button, you are an expression of that. And you're putting up a very bad opinion of me, you know? So we have to change our expression. We see Button, a gentle, loving, caring, sensitive dog with everybody. We don't see Button feeling he has to get close to our handyman. He may do that, but that's not the point. No barking. One thing around here, you know that. You don't take your urine and throw it all over the house. You don't urinate in the house, do you? You go in the bathroom. All right, well, the puppy, he learns to go outside and do his duty too. Herb, that's gross. Yes, it is, isn't it? Now, when the children come in the house, are they allowed to scream and holler when they come in the house? You're shaking your head no, Ellen. Is that the way you raised your kids?
No.
You didn't raise them to come and scream and holler in the house?
No.
You raised them to come and scream and holler in the house?
No. I raised them.
You what?
I have raised them to come in the house quiet and loving and happy.
You raise them that they come in the house quiet and loving and happy. Now, Ellen, what would your relatives, your friends and neighbors think if you didn't do that? They would think that you were a very careless mother. The kids who are hellions, who are running around screaming, hollering, and making a loud noise all the time, they are an expression of their parents' what? Their parents' laxitude. Their parents' inability to train their children, not control them, not whip them into shape, not break them, but to train them in the manners that the parents believe are important. Because the parents don't believe that's important. Now, I have given rules on campus here, and these are for each person to have a learning experience. As far as I'm concerned, it is not necessary. If I choose to do something, it's done. But when I'm here alone, we have a very orderly operation. But when you guys are here, then your attitudes are relative to the dog. Now, when the dog barks and hollers and jumps, do you immediately go over to him, put him on the leash, bring him over to you, and set him down? Bring him over to you, put him on the leash, set him down. Put him on the leash, bring him over to you, set him down. Bring him on the leash, put him over to you, set him down. Do you immediately do that? Or do you holler with sort of an ineffectual, "Oh, no, stop, you're making so much noise." And the puppy says, "Ha, ha, ha, you don't mean it." And so the puppy goes on barking. And then you go up to the dog, "Stop it, sit." And the dog says, "Oops, she means it." He's not worried that you're angry at him. He's not worried that you are doing something terrible. He's just getting the message that you mean it. Now, can you say to him, "That's enough, Button, quiet now." Then have him be quiet. When you are in charge of yourself, your creation is in charge of whatever you have for them. When you are not in charge of yourself, your creation just takes over because you haven't taken over. If you want your dog to be orderly, then you be orderly. If you want your pet to be following your rules, then you follow your rules. If you want your pet to follow your rules, then you follow your rules. If you want your pet to follow your rules, then you follow your rules. If you want your pet to follow your rules, you follow your rules. Herb, why are you repeating these things so often like this? Well, if you want perfect health, you think perfect health all the time. If you want to be, I know that I know that I know, whatever I choose to know, I know God in me is the answer, then you stay with that every single moment. You never allow yourself to say, I wonder what this is. I can't figure this out. I don't know. You don't allow yourself to say that, because if you allow yourself to say that, you are violating the principle that you say you want to put into motion. If you holler at your dog, if you have not got control of your dog, then you have not got control of yourself. Why do I let you have dogs and cats and things like that here at the monastery? Why? Because they're training experiences for you. I let Stefan train LeBaron and LeDuc, and I told Stefan, take good charge. I had trained them for months. The LeBaron and Duke ran with me all over the property. We did everything, had never under leash. They were always under my control, and we had a wonderful time. Stefan goes out with the dogs and doesn't take responsibility for training them, and gobble, 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 their dinner for the coyotes. And how sad. And then I told Sylvia, she had, what was his name, Snuggles. I said, now, Sylvia, train Snuggles off the leash. Train Snuggles to come when you call him. Train Snuggles. And she didn't do that. She did it a little bit, but not seriously. And so Snuggles went running off one day, and the leash was found along the path without Snuggles. That is, the collar was found. She had been dinner for some coyote. Now, how long are we going to have these examples before us until we come to the conclusion that we must take responsibility for our world? Now, there's nothing wrong with a coyote having dinner. And it's just that we don't want him to have our pets as his dinner. And for doing that, we have to be responsible for our pets. I used to have Gus, and I trained him in the back of my home in El Centro for 6-8 months. We would walk up and down a path, up and down a path. I would stop, sit, stand, stay, and I'd walk away, come, sit, stand, stay, I'd walk away, and do this here, and I'd do that every single day for at least a half an hour. Every day. And when I was in the city, I would say, sit. Or he'd be running ahead looking at things, and I'd say, button, sit. And he'd just immediately, button, Gus, sit. And he'd immediately sit down wherever he was, in the middle of a lot of people walking along, but he'd never cross the sidewalk in the street unless I gave him permission to do it. You see, he was trained. I cared enough to train him. And it was a bother, but it was a bother well worth it. Wherever I went, he was a welcome guest in people's homes. At church, he would sit there with his paws in prayer, and everyone would respect that. When they'd see Gus get up to pray, then they would all start to pray. They'd all sit quietly in their chairs. But you see, this took just a little training. Now, I didn't say I wanted someone else to train him. I did it myself. I didn't say, hey, Gus, you are now trained. I went through the normal process, because that is a lesson that I'm using for others. And I went through the process to see how it worked, and it worked beautifully. Now, if we are not going to learn how to train our pets, do you think we're going to learn how to train our attitudes and our thoughts? Do you think you're going to learn how to train the ideas that come into your mind and the ideas that you think are important? This is extremely important. And it's not something in the outer. It is merely a work of self-confidence, of self-discipline, self-diligence, self-dedication. It is just a work of this particular aspect of our consciousness, training ourselves so that we can do whatever we want to do. Do you ever speak a word which is contrary to your highest best?
Mm-hmm. No, never.
Do you ever think a thought, ha ha ha, that is contrary to your highest best, you know? Do you ever wonder why your life is so wonderful or why your life is so sad? And if your life is wonderful, you're at fault. It's a nice fault, huh? And if your life is terrible, you're at fault. No, that's not too cool, you know. Now, if you have someone in your life who is smoking or drinking or taking drugs or using bad language or not fulfilling their promises to your relationship, if you have anyone in your life like that, then that's you. That is you. You, it's not necessarily that you're drinking, you're smoking, or those things, but you are violating your agreement with yourself. Now, your agreement with yourself is, I am whole and perfect. I like me. I do all those things that make me into a wonderful, likable person in my society. I don't lift my leg on the furniture, you know, like the puppy dogs. I'm not a badly mannered being. I am a good being. I don't burp in public, you know. And these are all things that are so very important. But if you don't train yourself to be this way, then you will see it in others, whatever fault you have in yourself. And you say, me? I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do this, I don't chew, I don't spit, you know, I don't do those things. But you do. You do. If you can have a motion picture, a videotape of yourself today, from the time you go to bed last night until the time you go to bed tonight, and it were taken without you knowing it, you would be ashamed of yourself. But it also reads your inside thoughts, you know. And you'd be ashamed of yourself. You'd be ashamed at how often you belittle other people, how often you speak down in your mind and yourself about other people, how often you think that you're not fulfilled in certain areas, how often you think that you're not getting a good kick in life, you know, that people are taking advantage of you, and you feel self-pity. You'd be amazed. You'd be really amazed. And when you found that out, you know what happened? Then you would feel even worse. It would not be an improvement. It is not an improvement to know your problems. Understand? It is not an improvement in your conduct, in your life, to know what your problems are. It is not a benefit to you to know where you're making mistakes. You say, well, if I know where I'm making mistakes, I can correct it and I can make it all better. No, you can't. You cannot change the bad to the good. You can only put good causes in motion that are beneficial for the direction you want to go for yourself. There is nothing else you can do. You cannot in any way discard, get rid of, in any way release the negative. You merely put the positive in motion, and the negative, not having any attention, disappears. The negative not having any attention disappears. Remember that. It's only the negative that gets attention that stays with us. The little boy is told to write on the board, I will not be bad, I will not be bad, I will not be bad. And all the time he is thinking up new ways to be bad. He's being reminded to think up new ways, you know. He says, I was a little too obvious. They knew what I was doing. I got to do that more quietly, you know, more seductively. And he does. He does. He thinks of these things quietly and in a way that nobody knows what he's doing. But that's good. That's good. Because the teacher is training him to be a little mischief maker. If the teacher were training the child to be a good child, what would the teacher tell the child to do? Write on the board 100 times what?
I like me.
Louder. I like me. Right. I like me, you know. the teacher would say, write on the board, 1,000 times now, I like me. But write it, write it, write it. What's going to happen to that kid? He's going to start liking himself. Now, the teacher says, when the kid is upset and doing some bad things, the teacher says, all right, I want you to go around the playground now with all the rest of the kids, and I want you to go up to each kid, and I want you to tell each kid something nice about them. I want you to go to each one of the youngsters on the yard and tell them something nice about them. Can you do that? Can you do that? Now, I'm going to go along with you on the first couple, so it'll be a little help to you. You know. And then there's Mary. And Mary's got that same dress that she's worn all week long, you know. And everybody is picking on her for wearing the same dress all the time. And you're going to say something nice. Now, say something nice. Mary. Yeah. I know why you wear that dress all the time, because you like it so much. And it is a very pretty dress. And then, bah, you're gone. It's not because her family didn't have any money to buy her clothes and other things, and she had to wear the same one, but because she liked it so much. Now, what's going to happen in Mary's consciousness when he says that? What's going to happen in his consciousness when he says that? You get a whole new, and it's his idea. He has a whole new attitude. Now, Johnny has been picking his nose all day long in the playground. He's digging deeper and deeper and deeper, and you wonder if he's going in for the mine, you know. And so it's bothering you, and it's none of your business, but it bothers you. And so you go up to Johnny and you say, Johnny, I would bet that you would make a great piano player. You know that? I bet your fingers are so nimble. You can do such wonderful things with your fingers. I bet you'd make a great piano player. And it's not going to take instant dirt, you know, instant planting of that seed. But within a short time, Johnny's going to go by the piano and bling, 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 bling. And then next thing, he's going to go by his mom and say, Mom, can I take piano lessons? And next thing you know, he's going to be a concert pianist in Carnegie Hall. You know, it's a simple little thing like that. You don't say, stop picking your nose, it's gross, you know. Not grossy, but gross, you know. And that's not the thing. That doesn't accomplish anything. And so then another little boy out on the playground, he's being unkind to the rest of the kids. He's a little bully. And he's going around picking on everybody. He just loves to pick on the girls because they can't fight back as well. And so he's picking on one of the little girls, and the little girl is crying, and you come up to him and you say, you know, Johnny, you are such a loving, sensitive guy. The girls just always seem to cry when you come around. You must be very special. You must always be doing something nice for these girls that make them want to cry whenever you come around. Johnny, you are a fantastic guy, you know? Now, what do you think is going to happen there? Is he going to stop being a bully to the girls and stop being a bully to himself and stuff? Or is he going to start being a joyous, friendly guy who says, whenever I come around, the girls, you know, cry for happiness because they like to see me, you know, or whatever. You see, it's a simple psychological thing that when you do this, the whole picture changes. But it doesn't change because you have said how it has to change. You have merely made out of a sow's ear a silk purse. And you can do this anytime you wish. Because the silk purses are just all lined up in your mind, waiting to be handed out for all of the sow's ears that you find. You can do it. You can do it because it's part of your life. It's part of your world. It's part of your way of being. If Rhonda in 1 month can learn a whole new physical culture program and come away an illumined being, we can too. We can too. Ingeborg, you can come away an illumined being. If you just say to yourself, I am always excited about everything that happens on campus, you know? I'm always excited about everything that happens on campus. And so then what happens to Ingeborg? She says, Herb, come here, Herb, here, I gotta see this. Come on, come on, Herb, come on. And I go rushing out there thinking that some great cataclysmic action is taking place, maybe an earthquake or something, you know. And then she says, look, look, look. And she points to an ant. And the ant is having a discussion before the rest of the ants. And the ant is saying, okay, now, boys, follow me. We're going forward. And then all of them line up behind the ant, and they go forward. She says, I've been watching him do this now for a couple of days. This one ant is the major, you know, and he's training the other ants how to do it. Can you see what they're doing? Can you see? Well, now, it's her consciousness who has trained them. It's her consciousness who has established this ant brigade as some fascinating experience. And she wanted to share it. And that's lovely. But you see, it's her creation. It's her creation. Are you able to have your creation do whatever you want it to do? Are you able to have the leader of the ants do the things you want it to do? You look at a lot of television and a lot of these shows, and they have cartoons, and they show the ants at a picnic, you know, and the ants come marching out, and they form a honor guard underneath the pie, and they all hold up the pie with one of their paws while they're walking with the rest of them, and they walk away with the pie. And then, of course, Mortimer Smurd and Mud, they come out and they see their pies walking away. Don't. They don't pick up the pie and stop it. They just chase after these ants who have an amazing speed to accomplish what they want to accomplish. But can you see, every one of these little cartoons that you see is somebody's imagination that has made them a great bundle of money and has been a lot of fun for them to do. Every one of these imaginative things that we talk about, these are the things that we've established in our life and we've created for ourselves, and it is a lot of fun. Think about that. Think about that and think how that's your world. That's your life. That's what's important to you. And train the boys, the girls, the cats, the dogs to be exactly what you wish them to be. And you will have them be that. Exactly the way you wish them to be. So on that note, let us prepare for our next hour, in which we're going to talk about I am spiritually illumined. So, have a lovely pause, and we will see you in a few moments.